Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. This is the Health and Wellness Radio Show. Our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. The goal of this program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow the listeners to make informed decisions about what may be the right health approach for them. I am your host, Carol Ferraci. I'm a registered licensed dietitian who has practiced for over 30 years. I'm also the founder of Naturally Nutrition, Inc., and you can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. As a healthcare practitioner, it is important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. Tonight's show is Your Heart, Go Ahead and Eat at McDonald's. The goal of this show is to provide valuable credentialed information when faced with maintaining a healthy heart, especially when it comes to cholesterol-lowering drugs classified as statins. You may know these as Lipitor, Zocor, Tricor, Crestor, just to name a few. Please let me remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it is always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number tonight is 341-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to www.blogtalkradio.com/The Scoop. I am honored tonight to tell you that our guests are highly credentialed in their fields. We have Dr. Edward M.D., FACC. Dr. Kirsch is the Chief of Cardiology at St. Luke's Hospital, San Francisco, and is a clinical professor of medicine at the Universities of California, San Francisco, the Giesel School of Medicine at Dartmouth, and Touro. Dr. Kirsch is an active teacher of cardiology fellows and medical students. In 2000, he was honored with the Kaiser Foundation Teaching Award as Voluntary Teacher of the Year at UCSF. He has also been given the Gold-Headed Cane Award by the AOA Honor Society at UCSF and the Outstanding Teacher Award in Cardiology at CPMC. Dr. Kirsch is an active teacher of cardiology fellows and medical students. He has been recognized by his peers via an election to the best doctors in America. We also have Dr. Christopher Bump, Doctor of Chiropractic. He has created a unique model of healthcare by integrating functional medicine and chiropractic. He holds a master's degree from Columbia University in human nutrition and certifications in clinical nutrition with the AMA College, the International and American School of Clinical Nutrition, and he is also a diplomat with the Chiropractic Board of Clinical Nutrition, where he presides on the education committee. An adjunct instructor at Columbia University, numerous chiropractic organizations in the country. Dr. Bump, also a graduate of the Functional Medicine Institute. You can reach Dr. Bump at www.drbump.com. Remember, the number to call in is 341-855-894. And with that, let's say hello to Dr. Kirsch and Dr. Bump. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Carol.
How are you tonight?
Carol. Very good.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have so many things to talk about tonight. I know that you caught the name of the show, You're Go Ahead and Eat at McDonald's. I got to tell you that I did some preparation for this show, and in the middle of preparing, I got to tell you, I got a little confused. Food plays a role. Food doesn't play a role. Cholesterol, good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, familial connections and blood testing. So I am so looking forward to your expertise, and I know that the people who are listening, we already have some callers calling in, and I can tell that they're just waiting to hear from you guys. So I'm going to ask the first question is, let's just start with the elephant in the room. Or what is cholesterol?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody want to take that? Dr. Kirsch?
Well, cholesterol is a sterol and lipid, and it's actually a substance that's necessary to life. Cholesterol forms part of the membranes of every cell that you have. It's also a precursor for the the synthesis of many of your hormones. However, cholesterol also gets integrated into plaque, and plaque is what narrows arteries and eventually can cause heart attack and stroke. So while it is not the only factor in the development of heart disease, and when we say heart disease, I'm really speaking about vascular heart disease, there are other factors, blood pressure, smoking, and so on. It does have a major role. So I think that pretty much summarizes what cholesterol
okay.
is.
So, I just know as a healthcare practitioner and a dietitian, people automatically associate the word calorie with something bad. And I think that cholesterol has that same connotation. But thank you explaining it that way, because you just said it's essential to life. And I think that's something that people need to really hold on to, that you can't just eliminate all cholesterol. That's never going to happen, or else you wouldn't be alive. Correct.
Yeah, it's probably not possible.
Probably not possible, right. So, but with that, as recently as just yesterday, ABC, CBS, NBC, all the major news organizations came out with the study that said that don't necessarily play a role in elevating cholesterol. And so those three eggs a week that we're recommending to people, maybe not so much anymore. The saturated fats, maybe not so much anymore. If that's the case, the premise of this show was to talk about the medications attached to lowering cholesterol, and a lot of times those things are attached to food and exercise. So diet and exercise was always in conjunction with the medication in many cases. So where do you end with that, and how do you feel about that? Because we haven't even been talking about statins yet, but that report just came out. Yes.
Let's first of all look at 100 years of research on the role of cholesterol in heart disease, and one paper that came out last week. So there's a big tipping balance here in terms of the evidence. And one reads a lot of the medical blogs today, there are professors at the Harvard School of Public Health and School of Nutrition who are saying this study was, not valid. So I wouldn't want your listeners to go away thinking, oh, I'm going out and getting a can of Crisco and making French fries tonight on the basis of this one study. That's not going to do it.
I think that's absolutely valid point, in that one study doesn't always do it, and I'm glad you made that point. Dr. Bump, do you have anything to add?
Thank you. Yes, I do. There's a couple things I'll say. One is that the quality of fat in a food product is going to be dependent on the food source of the animal. So I read a paper recently about the fatty acid composition of beef that is grass-fed versus corn-fed, and it's a world of difference. And I believe the same is true with egg yolk as well. I should also point out that there are tribes in Africa that live on a very high, like 70% saturated fat diet. So maybe we don't have all the answers there yet.
Yeah, I think to put it into further perspective, we have to go back 100 years. And 100 years ago, there was a Russian pathologist whose name was Anichkov. And what Anichkov did was he took rabbits. Rabbits, by the way, are very susceptible to atherosclerosis. And he fed one group of rabbits a high cholesterol diet and one group a low cholesterol diet. And then he sacrificed the animals and did postmortem examinations. And, of course, as you would expect, the animals who had been on the high cholesterol diet developed atherosclerosis. Now, what we're looking at here is, yes, high cholesterol, but also a susceptible, genetically susceptible species. So there are multiple factors. I think Dr. Bump's point about the source of cholesterol and the source of the saturated fats is also a very important one. And certainly, you know, going back to the title of your show today, I would say that when you think about the quality of saturated fats that you get in a Big Mac and fries, that's a whole different thing than grass-fed beef.
Point well taken. And you know, I'm not sure that we don't need to do an entire show on the types of foods that are out there. I think that's the whole topic that you guys just gave me. I'm writing that one down. But Dr. Bump, when you talk to patients about the choosing the foods that you just mentioned, you know, what does the average person take away from that, and is it possible for people to be able to, for everyone to be able to afford a grass-fed beef versus non-grass-fed beef, and how does that play a role with this topic?
It's a good point, Carol. In rural New Jersey here, we have more and more farmers raising grass-fed beef. It's not, they're not raised on organic fields because that's fairly impractical at this point. But within a 5-mile radius, there's probably 10 farmers now. And the cost per pound is actually equivalent to what one would get for commercial beef in a supermarket. I don't want to digress, but there's other issues involved with that as well, environmental issues as well. What I tell patients is that they can afford a healthy diet much more so than they think they can. And I have a nutritional educator in the office that directs patients through how to shop for these things. We have farmers that bring in their eggs to our office as well. An interesting thing,
so,
is a little side note. Go ahead.
No. It's okay. I just wanted to say, so it is absolutely feasible for somebody. And I know even from my own experience that it is feasible, and it's not necessarily a wallet breaker if the education is there on how best to do that. I think your points are well taken. And Dr. Kirsch, you mentioned something here that I kind of wanted to get into a little bit too, and that was genetics. I was doing the research for this show. I noticed that genetics and familial actions tend to play a role. And you're well taken with cholesterol and elevated levels of cholesterol and the cholesterol being necessary for our lives. At the same time, what about the difference of cholesterol? How is the average person supposed to really decipher? You know, I hear people in the grocery stores going, but my good cholesterol is up and my bad cholesterol is okay. You know, where do the ratios fit in, and what is good cholesterol versus bad cholesterol?
Okay.
And Dr. Bullock, I know that you've worked with that as well. So maybe
I sure have.
Well, let's again look at history. And this time we're only going to go back 50 years. And in about 1948, Harry Truman, after the death of FDR, created the National Institute of Health because they realized that FDR had suffered from heart disease, mostly related to his blood pressure. But what they funded was something called the Framingham Study. And Framingham, Massachusetts, is up in the Northeast. And they went into Framingham and examined all the people who were willing. And they took their blood. And then they went back every year. And about 10 years later, the Framingham study published its initial results. And what did they find? they found that there were certain risk factors that produce heart disease. Among them, of course, age, male gender, family history. Now, those are things you can't do anything about, really. So we're going to set those aside for now. But then there was blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, and smoking, which are things you can do something about. And that's really the focus, because we do know that if you change those parameters, you will change the outcomes. Now, the Framingham study pointed out for the first time that there were broadly two types of cholesterol known as good or low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. Bad cholesterol, and good cholesterol, or high-density lipoprotein cholesterol. And they looked at the ratios of these substances in the blood of the people in Framingham, and they were able to say that if you had an adverse ratio of your actually total cholesterol to high-density lipoprotein cholesterol, roughly around 3-1, you were at risk for heart disease. That people who had higher HDL cholesterols seemed to have a more protective effect. So that's where this all begins. Now,
okay, so then that just means that when people are talking about their good cholesterol, that where the good cholesterol falls in relationship to the low cholesterol, should they be concerned about that? And is that where the statins come in? And if not, or is there an alternative to statins, which I know Dr. Bump has some things to say about that one.
Can I interject here before we move on, just as a point of clarification? The Framingham study really, I think, set a precedent that lifestyle was a factor in affecting the kinds of cholesterols and the consequences of health that this group or cohort was experiencing in Massachusetts. That and the seven country study said, okay, we need to start to look at diet and see what's going on with elevated cholesterol. But the point I really want to make, Carol, for you and your listening audience is that I think it's a mistake to use the expression bad cholesterol or good cholesterol. We just established at the start of our show that cholesterol is essential for life and that it is a necessary molecule for transporting fats to our cells. If you say 10 trillion cells in your body, they all need cholesterol. So I'd like to make a distinction that LDL LDL is a low-density lipoprotein that's carrying lipids, and HDL is a high-density protein that's carrying lipids as well. The ratio is going to have an influence on us, but why that ratio goes off, we can talk about that. That was just
brilliant. I think, Dr. Bump, I think we're really saying the same thing. And I don't want to get into the pathways and the mechanisms of LDL receptor activity in the liver and all this sort of stuff. But what I think we need to look at are the extremes. If we look at the extremes here, we can see certain trends. So there's a condition known as familial hypercholesterolemia.
Right.
These patients are unable to metabolize LDL cholesterol. And they get cholesterol levels of 1,400, 2,000. Now, remember, normal is 200. Their cholesterol levels are enormously high. They develop xanthoma. These are cholesterol deposits under their skin. And they get heart disease in childhood and adolescence. So this is one extreme where LDL cholesterol has sort of run amok. There's another extreme, which is low HDL cholesterol. People with very low HDL cholesterol also get premature heart disease. Conceptually, the way I try to look at this and teach people is that LDL cholesterol takes cholesterol from the liver and puts it into the blood vessels, whereas HDL cholesterol is more of a scavenger. It takes cholesterol from the plaque and from the blood vessels and brings it back to the liver, where the liver metabolizes it. So, you know, it's not quite as simple, and we haven't gotten to the issue of statins yet, but we will in a little while, I'm sure.
Yeah, and on that note, I'm just gonna take care of a little bit of business here, and then we'll get into the issue of statins, okay? For those of you who have just joined us, you are listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a licensed registered dietitian and founder of Naturally Nutrition, Inc., and you can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Tonight's show is Your Heart, Go Ahead and Eat at McDonald's, featuring Dr. Edward Kirsch, Chief of Cardiology at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco, and Dr. Christopher Bump, Doctor of Chiropractic, specializing in integrative functional medicine and chiropractic. We will be taking questions in just a bit, and what we'll do is I will call out the last four digits of your phone numbers, and when I do that, I'm going to say, caller 1234, you're on the line. So if you have your phones muted, please unmute them at that point and say hello. And I just want to remind everybody that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topic of discussion, it's always right to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. Okay, that being said, let's talk about statins. And I just want to know, you know, in doing some of the research with the statins, I was astounded. What I found out was one of the statins in particular, atorvastatin, is the top-selling drug in all of history. And last year alone, it grossed $1.2 billion with a B dollars for the drug industry. That was just astounding to me that there were that many sales. However, if I take a statin drug, does that mean that my cholesterol is going to level off? And exactly what you were just talking about in terms of the ratios between LDLs and HDLs and the familiar, does that actually take it to take me to a new level so that I actually can eat a Big Mac?
Okay. Well, first of all, you've given us a very interesting fact, and that is that they sold more tablets of Lipitor last year than Big Macs.
Wow. Now, right? That says a lot.
Yeah. Well, McDonald's is on the slide. Their sales are down
20%. So that's the first.
Wow.
The second is, if you look at the national statistics just in the United States right now, and these come from the American Heart Association, for the past 20 to 25 years, the rates of heart attack and stroke have dropped dramatically. And what's happened in the last 20 to 25 years? Well, certainly the statins have been introduced, and people are taking them. Now, also, people don't smoke as much, and people's blood pressure is under better control, so people are more health conscious. Again, I'm pointing to the fact that all of this is multifactorial, and it's not just one thing. Now, to answer your question, Carol, if you take a statin drug, and we'll take atorvastatin, of course, that's the number one statin drug, it will lower your LDL cholesterol by at least 50%. So that's quite dramatic. Now, the American Heart Association recommends that your LDL cholesterol should be less than 130. And if you have heart disease, it should be less than 100. And actually, the optimal level, which has been shown by some studies, where plaque actually reverses, is when your LDL cholesterol gets down around 70. Okay, well, how are you going to do that? If you're a patient who's had a heart attack and your LDL cholesterol is 170, you can expect that if you take a higher dose of Lipitor, you will drop your LDL cholesterol down to 70. So that's the answer to your question. It will lower your LDL cholesterol quite dramatically.
Okay.
It does not have as much effect on HDL.
I see. So it's LDL mainly that statins are affecting.
That's correct.
I have a follow-up question to that. Maybe Dr. Bump, you can answer this one. Those are alarming statistics that if the statins are going to lower the LDL cholesterol at 50%, and it can actually get it down even further to even have a reversal effect, that's fabulous. But at the same time, I know there are side effects to the statins, and some of those side effects, you guys absolutely correct me if I'm wrong, but some of those side effects are muscular pain, and even diabetes has been attributed. And so my question, my follow-up question would be, is there ever a time where the side effects outweigh the benefits?
Carol, I don't prescribe statins, and I have never needed to, but of course my licensing doesn't allow me to. This is Dr. Bump speaking. But I would like to clarify a point, Dr. Kirsch, too, and you can help me with this. I think we need to define what we're talking about with cholesterol currently. We've learned so much more about this fat-carrying protein and what statins are really doing. And the point I want to make is that we now know that the LDL, we need to know that when we speak about LDL, we're talking about a protein that's transporting lipids, i.e. fats, through the body. And as Dr. Kirsch astutely pointed out, the LDL goes from the liver out to the peripheral cells. But this fat, as we now know, can be analyzed in terms of particle number, how much is there, and also particle size. And so there can be a lot of real big particles, or there can be a lot of real little particles. And depending on the size, that also warrants risk. So if you have a lot of little ones, those will get in between the cells, and they are really much more higher risk for creating heart disease than these large fat particles.
Yeah.
Dr. Bump, you're absolutely right. We'll come back to statins in a minute, and I'll just address this quickly. There are, for all practical purposes, LDL cholesterol comes in two forms, small, dense LDL and large, buoyant LDL. And you can just picture that. The large, buoyant particle is bouncing around through your circulation, and it never gets burrows into the cell wall of the blood vessel, whereas the small dense does, and it gets in and becomes part of the plaque and creates that. So I will look at patients, let's say, who come in and they say, gee, my cholesterol is 250, and they have no evidence of heart disease. Do I have heart disease? What should I do? In a case like that, I would say, okay, let's fractionate your LDL cholesterol. It's a very easy test. It's called a VAP test. It's done by a company called Atherotech. You can Google it and find out about it. And if I see a patient whose cholesterol numbers are a little bit high, but yet it's large, buoyant LDL, that patient does not need statin drugs. Now, let's shift for a second. Now we have a patient who's had a heart attack, and I know that patient has evidence of vascular disease. And they have that same cholesterol, total cholesterol, as the patient I just talked about. That patient should be on a statin drug, whether they have high, large, buoyant, and I will tell you that it's very rare for those people to have large, buoyant LDL. Most of those people have small, dense LDL. The people who have vascular disease, those are the ones who I'm seeing at the other end of the spectrum. So your point is a very good one. There are some forms of LDL cholesterol that are not vasculogenic, but I don't want people to go away from this show thinking, oh, I probably have large buoyant, I'm okay. Go to your doctor and get the test before you make.
Well, again, I think that's an excellent point, because people do need to go to their doctors and they need to get checked out before, they just jump and do anything. That we're simply the goal of this show is to provide information. It's not to have anyone just diagnose themselves.
Right.
So,
let me allow me to share a practical example that I see frequently in my office is a patient that comes in who's on a statin, and he's wanting or she's wanting to get off of it. And I this one patient recently comes in and his cholesterol is 165 milligrams per deciliter, and I said, well, let's take a look at your fractionated lipid profile. And his large, buoyant ones were borderline high, but his small, dense ones, the high-risk ones, were extremely high, close to 800. So this guy, even though he was on a statin, was still at very high risk. And interesting, he had a number of other very high-risk markers for heart disease that his medic had not checked, like hemoglobin A1C and heart high sensitivity C-reactive protein. And these are the things that need to be done in association with looking at lipid profiles, these other risk factors.
Well, I would tell you that that patient that you just described should probably be on niacin.
that's a good point, because part of this, too, is what can people, you mentioned before, lifestyle changes, no smoking, diet, exercise, but also there's some supplements involved with niacin, like you said, and Dr. Bump, you're absolutely correct in that the levels here are, they need to be looked at. So thank you so much for bringing all that out. But what I'm concerned about now is the listener who's listening to us and how confused they might be at this point, because we've talked so many things. So what I would like to do is try to narrow the scope a little bit here, just to kind of give some people an opportunity to get some. So we've got a couple of questions on the blog. I'm just going to read one or two of those right now, and then we're going to go to callers, because we've got a considerable amount of callers. So if that's okay with you guys, maybe we can start to narrow some of this a little bit, because we do. There's so much to talk about here.
There really is, Carol.
So
yeah.
We've got one person asking, is there a cure for high cholesterol? Does the problem jump back up when you're no longer taking the statin drug, or even if the individual has changed the eating habits? So I think the question is more geared toward at what point can you make some changes from your lifestyle? Can you actually get to a point where you can take control, where the drug can help you take that control, or maybe not help you take the control and get you to a point where you no longer need it, or are you always going to need it?
Well, the answer is that in most patients, they're always going to need it because their livers are producing too much LDL cholesterol. However, I try to make a contract with patients when they come in. And the first step is a diet for everyone. A diet and lifestyle changes need to happen. And diet and lifestyle changes can reduce your LDL cholesterol by about 15%. Now, so if a patient is in a borderline range, I'm going to suggest that to them. Sometimes I will say to them, your levels are a little too high. Let's start the statin drug now and do the diet and lifestyle change. And when we've gotten your lipids down into normal ranges, then we can talk about cutting back on the statin drug and see what happens. So that's a reasonable outcome. There's a danger, there's a danger in just stopping a statin drug. And that's because...
Okay.
What the statin does is it inhibits an enzyme in the body, and that enzyme takes the building blocks of cholesterol and creates cholesterol. Now, when you inhibit that, those building blocks tend to build up. So if you suddenly stop taking your cholesterol drug, your cholesterol level will usually rebound up quite quickly and quite dramatically.
So you can't
You can, but there's a risk.
there's a risk.
Just stopping.
Well, what about the side effects? I mean, aren't there true side effects that are attached
Let me say a few things about the side effects, because you asked that before. And I do prescribe statin drugs, and I've prescribed thousands of statin drugs. And
sure.
Basically, yes, statin drugs have side effects. They're all reversible.
Okay.
I've never had a patient have a fatal or disastrous side effect of a statin drug that didn't go away when you stopped the statin drug. So, you know, that's a big deal. Where does all this come from? Well, it comes from the early experience with statin drugs, because in the early days, the statin drugs were being dosed. They weren't as potent, and therefore they were being dosed in higher doses, and they did produce a muscle condition called rhabdomyolysis. Now, I haven't seen a case of rhabdomyolysis in 20 years, but 20 years ago, we did see some of those cases, and
what happened
is that's a pigment that gets into the kidneys and it can cause kidney failure, and that was a real disaster.
Sure.
However, I haven't seen a case of that in 20 years. But still, when you read the advertisements about statin drugs, you know, if you have muscle weakness or muscle pains, you know, notify your doctor immediately. And most of the time, it's absolutely nothing.
And is Dr. Bump see people
Carol?
And they come? Can you hear me?
Carol? Yeah, I'd like to go back to your first question regarding. Can diet affect, or can patients change their lifestyle well enough to remain off statins? There are too many parameters that surround that question, but if someone is taken through a proper lifestyle change where they're taught how to change their diet, and I'll speak to that in a second, their cholesterol and lipid panels will come down precipitously and remain down as long as they adhere to this. And when we speak about diets, there's so many different studies that look at different kinds of diets, and there are some that actually were more efficient at lowering cholesterol than statins. Like the portfolio diet is an example. But it's not just about diet, it's about the entire lifestyle.
So with that being said, with the lifestyle, Dr. Bump, are there also supplements that can be taken to help, like vitamin D or the niacin or CoQ10?
Absolutely.
Or?
Well, what I do, like this example that we were speaking to this patient just recently, I put him on a protocol of omega-3 essential fatty acids, red yeast rice extract, and high-dose niacin, along with a therapeutic lifestyle change. And I have example after example of patients that within sometimes as little as 6 weeks showed dramatic changes. And they remain that way as long as they adhere to the lifestyle change. And eventually, yes, sir.
Yeah, I think you've got the absolute right approach there. And
yeah.
But what I want to point out is that when you take niacin in large doses, it's no longer a vitamin, it's a drug. So
right.
You're using it in mega doses, 1,000 milligrams, 2,000 milligrams, and it does have a pharmacologic effect. And it will lower cholesterol, and it's been known to do that. The other thing is red rice yeast, and, you know, let's not deny the fact that red rice yeast is a statin.
It is.
Red rice yeast is lovastatin, which is the first statin drug.
And it will create a myopathy just like statin. So coenzyme Q10 needs to be prescribed along with it, just like a statin. Yes.
Well,
that would be another show altogether. So
yeah, you're right. It would be. I mean, maybe we should like plan to have you guys come back and talk about some of these other outlying issues. We've got a whole lot to talk about. We've got more questions to take, but another question came in like There's a supplement. Somebody's asking about a supplement called Lunacin, where Lunacin is a soy peptide. It lowers cholesterol similar to statins without the side effects. Have either of you heard of that?
No, I have
Lunacin,
not.
No. It sounds too good to be true.
Okay. Well, I do believe heard of it, and I do know a little bit about that, but not enough to really talk about it tonight. But it's certainly something to think about, and it does hold value to maybe our follow up show. What do you think?
I know that it's a soy derivative, and some of the steroids in soy are very effective in regulating lipids. There's a number of foods like that.
Yeah, I just Googled Lunacin here, and not only is it good for cardiovascular disease, it's also good for cancer. So unfortunately, Lunacin falls into the category of food substances. And as a result, they're really not subjected to the same types of rigorous testing that drugs are in terms of outcomes research and so on. And it may well have some effect on lowering cholesterol, but does it have an effect on preventing heart attacks?
But I might add that omega-3 fish oils are also a food substance, and there have been thousands upon thousands of studies, and so many of those studies have been related to their benefits for cardioprotection and lowering lipids.
Absolutely agree with you.
So again, maybe that's a follow-up show. We need to. Obviously, we've got a lot of questions come in, and let's try to get to those.
I would be reluctant to rely on Lunacin. On Lunacin. As a pure therapy, there are many other options for lowering cholesterol besides Lunacin.
Okay, one last question on the blog, and then we're going to hit the fines here for a minute. I'm gonna do this last piece of business and give me a minute here. You're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. And our host, Carol Ferraci with Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Tonight, about your heart, go ahead and eat at McDonald's, featuring Dr. Edward Kirsch, Chief of Cardiology at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco, and Dr. Christopher, specializing in integrative functional medicine and chiropractic. Remember that while our guests are highly credentialed, please consult your physician before implementing any and all of these recommendations. That being said, one last question on the blog is, there a connection between statin drugs and concentration? And I think that kind of falls in line with some of the things you've already said in terms of the side effects I'm sure that more than I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but based on what you said previously, I'm assuming that might be reversible as well once the dose is.
This all starts with a flight surgeon who developed total amnesia. He was the extreme case. He developed total amnesia on a statin drug. And when he stopped it, he came back to normal. And in fact, statins can produce some changes in terms of your memory. Women seem to be more susceptible than men, but it is reversible. Now, interestingly, most statin drugs are lipid-soluble. And the greatest concentration of lipid in the body is the brain. So they do tend to concentrate in the brain. There are some alternatives, because there are some water-soluble statin drugs which don't seem to have as much of this side effect. However, again,
it is reversible. And as I said, it seems to be more prevalent in women.
Okay, great. Let's go to the callers.
Carol,
Dr. Bump, would you like to say something?
Just one little thing here. There was a study.
I'm so sorry. Yes.
There was a study done in 05 that related statins and Parkinson's disease, and there's some association that for neurodegeneration that we need to consider, and as more information comes out around the nature of inflammation and the relation of the blood-brain barrier and the inflammatory tendency in the central nervous system, i.e., the brain. We need to take closer looks at that. So I'm not so comfortable with that idea that statins don't affect, because as Dr. Kerr said, our brain is the primary site for cholesterol deposits.
Wow.
Well,
great.
There's mixed data on that in terms of Parkinsonism. And also Alzheimer's,
right.
In that people who are treated with these drugs in earlier life tend to have lower incidence of Parkinsonism and a lower incidence of Alzheimer's. So there's a paradox there. While the drug may produce some short-term cognitive impairment, in fact, it may have some benefits long-term in terms of degenerative brain disease, but the data is still out on this.
Right.
So we should.
All right. Let's do some questions here. We're running short a little bit on time, so we've got some people who have been patiently waiting. Thank you so much for waiting. We are going to caller number, the last four digits being 0182. You are on the air, 0182. Hello?
Maybe
okay,
they don't
caller
know
182. All right. We're going to move on, and we're going to do... caller 3523. Can you hear us? 3523? Okay. 3523. All right. Let's try that one more time. 2195. Caller 2195. Hello? We're not having very much luck here.
Striking out there, Carol.
You are totally striking. To try 6767. Hello, 6767.
Wow.
If you're muting your phones, please unmute because we can't hear you. Okay, and let's try one more. 8211. Caller 811. We are striking out tonight, gentlemen.
All right.
Well, we've got more questions on the blog, so you can. Those that can hear me, I don't know. We're not getting you. I see one here. I'm going to try that I did not, and that is caller 4874. 4874.
4874. Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear
me? We're on the air. We actually. Way to go.
Yay.
Hi.
Okay, so my name is Nancy, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist in the Hudson Valley in New York, and thank you so much for the show. It's been really great so far. I've learned a lot. Thank you. And I have a question for both doctors, and that is, could you please speak to the subject of women and heart disease, in particular, the relationship of estrogen as a heart disease preventive, and how that leads to a dilemma that many perimenopausal women face as to whether or not to take hormone replacement therapy?
Well, I can answer that for you.
Thank you.
I think that the data shows that if you start estrogen therapy during the perimenopausal period and then continue it into your postmenopausal period, that it has heart disease protective effects. And this is, of course, something that you have to balance with your physician, because you know, if you have a family history of breast cancer, you may not want to be doing that. So it's all a matter of risks and benefits. However, as I said, the studies now have shown that if you do that, if you start in the perimenopausal period and carry it through, there's a protective effect. However, if you start it in the postmenopausal period, you get the opposite effect. Now, in terms of heart disease in women, that would take us an hour, because there are many you know, different ways that heart disease presents in women, and I'm certainly going to acknowledge that. But I don't think we have enough time to really discuss it. Just that certainly it can present in ways that are not typical. Dr. Bump?
The short answer, Nancy, is that it depends on the other markers in your body. If you're inflamed and tending towards insulin resistance, and you may convert estrogens into a more active state, which then may interrupt with the arterial lining of your wall. If you're in good shape, you keep your inflammation down, your oxidative stress down, your stress is down, estrogens should not, they should be more cardioprotective.
Okay. And what about phytoestrogens or estrogen-like substances in food if somebody is hesitant to do hormone replacement therapy, whether or not it's bioidentical?
Well, from what I know, and most of this has to do with soy proteins, the studies have not borne out a protective effect. That's the short answer.
And I concur.
Okay.
Dr. Baum?
Yes?
Do you...
Oh, no,
I
go ahead.
No, you got... Do you have anything to add to that, Dr. Baum? That's all I was going to ask.
No, I agree with Dr. Kirsch. I'm not confident that the studies around soy are efficacious or accurate or reliable. Yeah. So,
right.
So I concur.
And
okay.
For both of you, do you feel that there is anything different that women should be doing as far as nutrition, supplements, possibly medications, that distinguish them from men because of how estrogen does play a role, you know, in the body for women?
Well, let's first start on the positive side, and that is that most women, particularly premenopausal women, have very high levels of HDL or good cholesterol, and that's cardioprotective. However, after menopause, those levels do start to drop off, as the estrogen levels, and that protective effect seems to be to go away some in the postmenopausal period. Now, in terms of what is prudent advice to women, well, know if you're hypertensive and take care of your blood pressure. Don't allow obesity to take over, because obesity leads to insulin resistance and diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And type 2 diabetes is a ravenous disease, particularly in older women. Don't smoke. And know what your cholesterol is, particularly your LDL cholesterol, because your HDL cholesterol might be falsely elevated a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So know all of these things. Now, I will tell you that if you Google risk score American Heart Association, just those words, up will come a risk calculator.
Right.
You need to know a couple of facts. You need to know what your cholesterol is, and you need to know what your blood pressure is. I'm assuming that you know your age and your gender and so on. Those are the other questions they ask. And you just fill those into this little spreadsheet, hit enter, and it tells you your 10-year risk of having a heart attack or a stroke. The magic number is 7.5%. At that point, at 7.5%, if you're less than 7.5%, you're a low-risk person. And
right.
You're probably doing all the right things. If it's greater than 7.5%, you're probably a high-risk person. Now, all of this is actually a modification of what was called the Framingham risk score. And the Framingham
uh-huh.
risk score used to say 10% was the dividing line. But because it seemed that women were more sensitive in terms of the results, they've lowered this now to 7.5%, and the current risk score calculation includes gender. So,
okay.
But that's the thing to do. Risk score, heart association. Up will come the American Heart Association risk score calculator. Go ahead and do it and see what your numbers look like.
Okay.
And one added little that is there a difference between the GMO soy and non-GMO? What do you want to speak to that?
Who asked that question? You asked that question, Carol. That's an entirely different program. And
I am not asking that. Someone else is asking that question. It just came through on the blog. So, I thought I'd add that as it relates to women in particular and what our caller had to say earlier. So
well,
I just thought I'd throw that in.
I just did a lecture on the effect of GMO. There's one GMO food on it, the effect of the flora alone in the gut microbiome, and it's creating inflammation in the gut epithelium. Just a blanket statement right now. GMO substances are not food, and they have serious consequences on aspects of our physiology that in this country are not being investigated. You have to go over to European countries to look at the studies where they're a little bit more open and not funded by the industry that supports that stuff. It's really a topic that needs a whole different program, Carol.
You're right. We need a whole different program on that. Caller, did we answer your questions?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. We really appreciate it. Great stuff. Thank you for exploring that with us.
On that
note, gentlemen, we're almost out of time, and I really do think that we've only scratched the surface on this, and
we
so
have.
I'm going to ask both if you wouldn't mind just considering maybe coming back and letting us do a follow-up, and we'll coordinate on how best to structure that if you're open to it.
I see you're amenable to that. Because we didn't even scratch the surface on the side effects of statins, and there are many that have not been discussed that I'd like to discuss sometime.
Okay, that I think
right.
that's more than fair. Dr. Kirsch, are you open to that?
Oh, yeah, no, I know them all and I've seen them all, so I'll be happy to talk.
Okay,
about
great.
So
we'll figure that out. I'm saying this on the air because I want our callers to know that we will follow up on this topic because we've got a lot of interest. I apologize to those callers that we didn't get through to. I'm not sure exactly what happened there. I want to thank everybody for hanging out with us and for asking such great questions, both on the blog and in person on the phone. Our next show is going to be February 26, 2015. It's called So Maybe You Aren't Crazy, Maybe It's Lyme Disease, and this show will tick you off. We will have Dr. Samuel Shore, who is the chair of the Lyme County Lyme Commission and the president-elect of the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society, and Allison Cararuna, who is the founder of the May Day Project, an organization dedicated to raise awareness about the multitude of issues attached with Lyme disease. It's going to be a fabulous show, and we automatically scheduled a follow-up to that for March 12th to talk about legalities of Lyme disease, because there's so many issues to talk about. So please join us on February 26th, and we will let you know when our follow-up to this show will be with Drs. Kirsch and Bump. Thank you so very much for joining us, gentlemen. I can't thank you enough. It's been more than informative, and I can't wait for the next one.
Thank you, Carol. It was quite enjoyable for me as well.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Dr. Kirsch, it was a pleasure.
Agreed.
Bye now.
Thanks, Dr. Bump. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.